day and welcome to the Axis Bank PLC Q3 2013 results to investors and analysts. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Aiboje Aikimukwede, Group Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, distinguished participants, and welcome to Axis Bank Q3 2013 results presentation to investors and analysts. As our coordinator indicated, my name is Aiboje Aikimukwede, CEO of Axis Bank. With me on the call are Herbert Wigwe.
Good afternoon.
Obiano Ohiwere.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Zuzo Ogunna.
Good afternoon.
Sheyi Kumakwai, our CFO.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yinka Tiamu, Chief Internal Auditor. Yemi Odusoya.
Good afternoon.
Business Banking in Lagos. And Kalu Agu, in charge of retail operations. Our presentation was published this morning on the bank's website, www.accessbankplc.com. It is in PowerPoint format, and the pages are indicated on the lower right-hand corner of each slide. We will point out as we present which slide that we are on to aid and ensure that you follow our presentation. If I speak to slide 2, it contains the agenda for today's presentation. We will commence by introducing to you our bank and take a quick snapshot of the operating environment. Our CFO, Sheyi Kumakwai, will take us through the financial performance review, and Herbert Wigwe, the Group Deputy Managing Director and CEO designate, will conclude with our Q4 outlook. If we turn to slide 3, we continue to maintain our conservative balance sheet, consistent with our goal of being a leading bank of best practice. You will note, in terms of our financial stability indicators, that there is a gradual increase in our loan-to-deposit ratio and our leverage position as we grow our loan book to corporate and SME clients. I did, of course, mention that my successor, Herbert Wigwe, will be concluding our presentation. Herbert will assume office as the Managing Director CEO of Access Bank PLC when I retire at the end of 2014. On slide 4, it's a slide that most of you are very confident with. The bank is one of Nigeria's Tier 1 institutions, classed as significantly important by the CBN, in other words, the SIFI. We do operate in a market that poses opportunities as well as challenges at all points in time. But I think even in the headwinds that have characterized our operating performance, it is universally accepted that the Tier 1 institutions are best placed to compete domestically. On slide 6, we speak to certain economic developments in our domestic environment. We maintain relatively strong GDP growth rates in excess of 6%, which across countries of the world are still leading indicators. Inflation continues to improve, and as the Central Bank of Nigeria becomes more explicit in its inflation targeting efforts, there is a signal that we should expect that inflation will continue to move south. Our Nigerian crude has straddled the $110 per barrel range, largely benefiting from tensions in the Middle East, and a continuous Arab Spring, even though now we are approaching, I guess, an Arab winter. The FX rates have attracted a lot of interest, particularly over the past 4 months. A lot of speculation as to whether the Naira would behave in the same way as the BRIC currencies have behaved, and a lot of expectation perhaps that you would notice or note a depreciation of the currency. In the official market, the Naira has held its rate on a mixture of relatively benign demand in the official market, so there has been no spike in official demand. The supply side has been somewhat also helped by the return, so to speak, of portfolio investors who seek to benefit from the tight monetary stance of the central bank. In the local currency market, the interest rates have oscillated between the MTR rate of 12% and NIBOR rate of 13-14% and money market interbank rate of an average of 16-17%, largely reflective of the policies around cash reserve ratios, particularly as affects public sector deposits. As you do know, beyond this, there have been a number of policy interventions which, on the whole, have had a revenue-constraining effect on the overall industry. I'll invite Sheyi Kumakwai to speak to the slides that are labeled 7 and beyond, essentially on our financial performance review.
Thank you. Thank you, Ike. I will just start with slide 8, which essentially talks about the key messages that we want to put through with this presentation. And there are about four of them. The first point is the fact that we've seen continuous improvement in our net interest margin. And if you look at on a quarter on quarter, we move from 6.6% to about 7.42 as we begin to maximize and utilize the assets on our foreign currency funding book. In the same direction, we've seen cost of funds also reduced by 50 basis points as we sought to replace expensive money with lower cost deposits. The second point is on the loan growth. We've seen year-to-date loan growth of about 25% and 11% on a quarter-on-quarter. I mean, details of this will be presented as part of this. So we've seen a good trajectory in our loan book. On asset quality, we've continued to sustain good asset quality. NPL ratio has declined to about 2.6%, compared to where we were, 2.8 at the end of the second quarter. The last point is the fact that we started to improve on our cost efficiency. Operating cost income is now down to about 73 from about 84. We've adjusted for the write back that we had in the half year. As you see, Q2 CIR was elevated by a number of one-off items, which I'll present when I talk to the operating expenses numbers. I'm now on slide 9, which essentially highlights the key performance of the bank, of the group, looking at profitability, our balance sheet, as well as our strong and prudential and performance ratios. Most of this I will talk through in the course of the presentation, so I'm not going to. I'll just move on. So I will take each of these items and explain in detail what is happening to a number of these metrics. Slide 10 essentially looks at the comprehensive income statement, and if you look at the top number, gross earnings at 164 compared to 160 in 2012. Clearly, what you see on quarter on quarter, we've seen the growth in gross earnings on the back of a very, very strong non-interest income. Now, if you look at interest income, at 109 billion, compared to about 1.3 billion in the same corresponding period last year. Clearly, the sale of government instruments in Q3 of last year, as well as the slower growth in loan book that we saw, and the impact of the increase in cash reserve requirement, has, you know, it impacted interest income, and that's why it's at the level that it is. On the other hand, interest expense at 50 billion compared to about 46 billion last year, also largely on the back of the high cost deposits, you know, that we were carrying since last year, which have now run off. But if you look at what happened on a quarter-on-quarter basis, we've seen reductions as we replace this expensive money. Non-interest income is up by about 19%, benefiting from, you know, the loan growth that we've seen. So we've seen credit-related fees. We've had very strong trading income as well as strong dividend income. Clearly, what we will see is that in the rest of the year, the loan growth that we've seen will continue to accrue, and then both in the last quarter as well as the 2014. Slide 11 just highlights critically where this revenue is coming from, both in geography as well as in terms of mix. So today, interest income accounts for about 71% of our revenue, while non-interest income accounts for 29%. I mean, I talk about the contraction that we saw, sale of government security, you know, the fact that the loan growth is just growing, and also the fact that, you know, what we've seen on what the loss that we've seen in the reduction in interest income, you know, compensated significantly by increasing non-interest income. So this is just to show you, you know, how the revenue, where it's coming from, and the various geographies. Now I will deep dive into the interest income. Now the key drivers, like I said, the build-up in the assets didn't happen as we had anticipated, you know, so this started happening, you know, late second quarter. Also, you know, we had a number of high-cost deposits of 9 to 12 month maturities, and which, you know, have run off now. In addition, the liquidity sterilized coming from the cash reserve also impacted, you know, ability to this was sitting at 0%. So these three factors, you know, is what you are seeing on the interest income. Even though NIM contracted on a year-on-year, but if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter, clearly you see a significant uplift. What we'll be going to do is, we are now, we've seen comparatively lower yields on assets in the period, because we've now started to increase our foreign currency exposure, and then we started to migrate, you know, you've seen that from last year to very high quality NIM, and therefore, you know, even though the volume has increased, you know, we are seeing pressure on the yield. However, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the yield has gone up, given the fact that we were carrying some significant amount of dollar funding, you know, which were not invested at the same period last year, and this has started to happen, and that was taking the yield to the levels that we are seeing. On slide 13, which is essentially the interest income, if you look at, you know, Q1, Q2, Q3, you will see that from 19 to 10 to 16. So really, Q3, essentially very strong income coming from the credit-related fees, given the loan growth that we have seen. Transaction banking income has started to improve as the engagement, you know, with customers and all of the initiatives that we are undergoing around the customer service has started to yield good fruit. Also, we've seen profit on sale of non-core idle assets. I mean, these are some of the branches that was acquired, and these branches are no longer in operations, and we started to sell off some of these branches. Now, in terms of interest income, you know, continue to contribute about 70% of non-interest income, about 30% of the revenue of the group. Slide 14 essentially gives more color to the operating expenses. What we've tried to do here is to show what is happening from a normalized OPEX perspective, you know, stripping out the one-off item. So if you look at cost-to-income ratio from 66 to about 69, you know, clearly coming from the fact that the income book didn't grow as much as we are. But however, CIR, you know, is without impairment, which we've adjusted for. If you look at the slide and the chart, is trending downwards on a quarterly basis. So if you look at September 2012, there's a small table in there. total operating cost was 75 billion, and September 13, total operating cost was about 78, so which is essentially a 4% increase. Now, what we've done below that is just to show you, in that 75 billion, there is a non-recurring item, you know, in 2012 about 8.7 billion, which we've highlighted at the presentation. So we had cost of integration, some of the severance benefit restructuring costs, as well as the loss on the disposal of the AMCOM bonds in 2012. Now, if you look at September 2013, total cost is 78, and the non-recurring items are about 4 billion. So really, coming to about normalized OPEX of about 75 billion. What you see is that on a normalized basis, OPEX has increased by 12.5. If you look underneath it, what you find is that out of this 12.5, 0.2%, you know, the 5.3 of this is coming from the increase in AMCON from 0.3 to 0.5, as well as the fact that, you know, this is now on a larger balance sheet. So that's really where, you know, almost half of that increase is coming from. We just wanted to, you know, give you more color to the expense numbers of the bank. Slide 15 is our impairment analysis. Looks at, you know, what has happened on the on our impairment. On a quarter-on-quarter basis, there is about 80 basis points increase. However, on a year-to-date basis, it's still about 8.7 billion. Clearly, we are very focused on continuous improvement in the quality of our portfolio, even while we strive to go. There is massive improvement in loan quality, as you have seen, you know, even in half one, and even now it's getting better. We also continue to, you know, develop our risk management strategy and to improve on the quality of our loan portfolio. Now, on the balance sheet, which is on slide 16, year-to-date growth of about 25%. Clearly, we've seen that on the dollar book, and from both from top corporate and commercial customers. On the deposit book, we've seen a growth of about 2%. Like I've mentioned before, this is coming from, you know, what we've done is we've repaid all the expensive money and we've essentially replaced them, and therefore you won't see. So that's why the growth is that muted. With respect to our total equity, you will see that total equity, you know, dropped from what it was in half year, largely as a result of the WAPIC spin-off, which was affected by distribution from the share premium account. So that's essentially, you know, the key items on the balance sheet with big variances. Slide 17 essentially looks at the loan book in terms of, you know, where it is and what has been happening, as well as from a loan to deposit ratio. I've mentioned before, loan growth of 25%. Loan to deposit ratio has increased to 62% from about 54% in June. Clearly, foreign currency exposure, if you look at the graph on the right, top right, has increased from about 25% to 36% in September, you know, as we seek to maximize the yield on our balance sheet. In terms of sectors, the sectors are still, I mean, we have a well-diversified loan book, and the sectors, you know, that we're exposed to are the good sectors of the economy, and it's not, it hasn't changed exactly from June 2013. Slide 18 looks at the asset quality. On a year-on-year basis, you know, we saw a decline of about 5 points, from about 5.2 in December to 2.6 in September. Drivers are essentially the fact that we've been very successful at our loan recovery, strong loan growth. If you look at the coverage ratios are at 84.3%, essentially stable. And if we were to add the regulatory reserve, which is essentially a reserve against provision, coverage ratio is about 110%. So in terms of coverage and coverage, we are well covered in terms of the non-performing loan book that we carry today. So if you look at the absolute about 19.5 to 20 billion. So really, from an absolute perspective, the NPL has remained stable. As well as if you look at the sectors, you know, also haven't changed. This is just the same sectors that we were exposed to as of June 2013. Slide 19 looks at the deposit mix in terms of where we are. On a year-on-year basis, we grew in about 2%, which I talked about. Emphasis has been on replacing the high-cost deposit with stable low-cost deposit in the course of the year. And that, if you look at CASA has grown 20 basis points, you know, compared to term deposit, which has declined. So the all of the work that we've done around, you know, reducing tenor deposit is beginning to show. And we continue to see strong contribution from subsidiaries. And if you look at the graph, you know, subsidiaries today account for about 18%, you know, of group deposits. Slide 20 essentially looks at the our risk-weighted assets and liquid assets. In terms of liquid assets, liquid ratio is now about 40%, clearly resulting from the additional liquidity we have to realize with CBN. That has significant impact, you know, on our liquidity ratio. Our capital adequacy is about 18%, largely accounted for by the loan growth that we've seen, the WAPIC spin-off which came out of equity, as well as the income that was paid in the period. So we project that, you know, by the end of 2013, we'll close at about 20% in capital adequacy ratios. I will then take us through the SBU financial performance review. So I'm on slide 22. Now, what you see on slide 22 is just our business segment, and to show you the business segment, the customers, as well as the products and services that they offer at each of these levels. You know, so I'm not going to go through all of this. I'm just to show you in terms of how they are categorized, what qualifies to be commercial bank, business banking, and personal banking, as well as looking at the various products, you know, that we have, you know, for this customer segment. Now, in terms of I'm on slide 23. In terms of contribution from business segment, strong contribution from commercial and national banking, which essentially is driving the profitability of the bank. We've seen very stable and source of funding from all the SBUs. The business banking division, as you know, we just started, you know, about 6-7 months ago, you know, and therefore really it's a developing business, and it just started to gain traction, and we'll discuss it when we go to each of the SBUs specific in terms of what they are doing to ensure that they return to profitability. Slide 24. This is corporate and investment banking. Corporate and investment banking PBT dropped from about 9.2 to 5.6. I mean, largely as a result of the write back that they had in Q2. So really, on an operating basis, you know, the performance actually improved. We've seen loan growth here, essentially coming from manufacturing, the oil and gas, midstream, as well as telecoms. We've seen fees and commission growth, which is largely driven by loan growth, and then what is in around, you know, cash management and collections. We are seeing a lot of traction and momentum with respect to signing on new customers, and assets continue to be targeted, you know, to very low risk corporate. In terms of what they are doing in Q4, we launched a corporate internet banking solution, Primus, in the course of the quarter, and this is being driven to ensure that we get the benefit of that around payment and collection to corporate. Clearly, the focus still on trade, project finance, and treasury management, which will continue to boost FX income. We are focusing selectively on, you know, top-end corporate, and the plan is that we want to sign an additional 20 customers in Q4 in 2013. Commercial banking, slide 25. Profit before tax dropped from about 7.2 to 5.4. This is the area of the bank that is mainly affected by the cash reserve, and that's where, you know, most of the reduction you are seeing is coming from, even though they had it. Yeah, from the public sector deposits, yes. That's where they sit. We've also seen, I mean, even though the source growth in credit-related fees and commissions, and also loan growth, you know, essentially the oil and gas, upstream and midstream side of things. In terms of Q4 action plan, one of the things that, you know, being across the various business segments is the strengthening of the sales force effectiveness, ensuring that we capture market share, Asian oriental market. This is an area where we're also going to use extensively our corporate standard banking solution. We have a very, very big funding dollar book, and this is one of the areas of the bank that is, you know, this is going to be utilized. clearly focusing on also high infrastructure and construction financing of opportunities, also growing market share of indigenous and non-IOC upstream firms. Slide 26, business banking. Like I said before, this business that just essentially started, so we've done a lot of work. We've identified the segments we want to play in, they are 13 number, and we've started to grow the loan book systematically. These loans are secured, even though we have a significant amount of pipeline, but you know, we are very cautious with respect to this sector. Also, what we focus on here is the resource optimization and enhanced productivity so that you know, we can begin to see profitability. Essentially, we are also making sure that the go-to-market strategy is being implemented in a very disciplined and structured manner to ensure that we get the benefit of the investment here. In terms of Q4, clearly to focus on the market that we've identified and to also see the visible impact of this market on the balance sheet. We're also leveraging on the value chain opportunities coming from the large corporate. We plan to reactivate about 80,000 accounts out of the almost 300,000 accounts that are dormant, and also to improve staff productivity, you know, by essentially, you know, strengthening the sales team. For personal banking, clearly what you see is we've moved from about 414 million to 535. Loan growth here is essentially in the HNI and the authorized network in Gudra. And also here, this is one of the areas where we've allowed some expensive deposit runoff. As we have increased engagement with customers in this market segment, we began to see them come back, bring back their money, and therefore we are seeing transaction banking income improve here. In terms of Q4 action plan and priorities, essentially, you know, continue to focus on, you know, that this product that's been generated, you know, penetrate the various businesses in this division. Continue to work with the various corporates, you know, particularly with the salary management. And you can see that from a salary management perspective, you know, that is increasing. Also, from an engagement perspective, you know, customer contacts continue to increase. Call agent rate improves, as well as, you know, push out the internet banking user from about 200 to 500K, as well as grow a salary account. At this point, I would like to call on Herbert to take the outlook for Q4 and 2014.
Thank you very much, Shay. Well, I think up until now, in 2014, we've spent a lot of our time in terms of managing and trying to make money from a balance sheet that has been considerably constrained by AMCON bonds, as well as managing costs deriving from integration and what I've just referred to as regulatory exigencies. I think as we approach the end of 2013, we will spend more time in putting in place the various structures required to pursue our 2014 corporate strategic plan and therefore come up with very definitive action steps required to position us for stronger earnings. We will continue to pursue our corporate banking business naturally and leverage off technology to make sure we drive our corporate value chain. Our corporate banking business has been the heart of our business since 2002. We will continue to push on it. But one of the things that has come out of the plan which we've done that has led to significant segmentation of our client base, particularly with the acquisition of Intercontinental, is the need for us to basically fine-tune our sales methods and services required to support the larger market needs that we now have. Our relationship management model will therefore be targeted increasingly at growing our retail value chain as well. And of course, one of the markets which we had identified is the Oriental market. In the past, we had focused on the Indian businesses, Lebanese businesses, etc. What we've done in our corporate strategic plan is basically come up with interesting buyer values and you know, propositions required to sell the larger Oriental market. So we're going to begin to pursue this market even more aggressively. And finally, we will coming out of the learnings of the various things which we've been doing, seek ways to basically transform our customer experience. Shehi had initially mentioned about Primus, which is basically our 21st century corporate internet banking solution, which we're extremely proud of. There are several of such initiatives which we'll be bringing into the market or that require to serve the disparate needs of our various customers. At the end of the day, what you're likely to see as we begin to approach 2014 is significant growth in our loan volume, also delicately, you know, reflecting the fact that we will be starting to do a bit more of our retail business while firing on our corporate banking business. However, in 2015, having pushed what we're going to push through 2014, we will start to draw increased profitability from the top 300 top corporates in the Nigerian banking system. We believe that from the learnings of what we've done over the past 9 months and the various customer service propositions which we're coming up with, we think that we should be able to attract whatever names that are left, you know, that don't exist, that don't currently bank with Access Bank, and deepen market share as far as those corporates are concerned. We will be seen in the market definitely as a very strong leader in our corporate business, but increasingly deepening our retail business as well. We will reactivate the various customers which have come from our acquisition of Interconnecto Bank, like Shehi said, through, you know, our various, you know, our contact centers, the different methodologies which are going to put in place with respect to how our staff engage customers depending on where they fall within the segment and all of that. And of course, the idea is that by 2015, definitely, we will be top three in the banking industry customer satisfaction rating. The idea is, like we've shared with you over the past couple of months, is that we will pursue our Access 1-2-3 strategy, where we will want to be seen and known and as one of the top three in all the markets in which we choose to serve. In Nigeria, as you would agree with me, there's not been much in terms of offerings, credit offerings to the retail consumers. We have spent a lot of time coming up with various products to certain market segments in the retail sector, and we believe that from 2015 going on, the market will begin to witness increased lending to this sector, albeit in a very, very strategic manner and deliberate manner to ensure that from a risk standpoint, we fall within our risk definition, which is moderate. That is basically what we are going to be doing. We think that we've come out of integration in a much stronger bank. We think we have the right platform, and most of the constraints which have been affecting our ability to deliver to our fullest potential, you know, would have been reduced as we come to the end of this year, and it will be time for us to basically power on a much stronger balance sheet.
Thank you very much, Herbert. That brings us to the close of our presentation and brings us to the start of question and answer session. If the operator would like to come in at this point to assist us with the framework for questions and answers. Thank you.
Certainly, thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. We will now take the first question from Muiwa Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have two questions. The first is around capital. I know you highlighted that you plan to, or you expect capital adequacy ratio to move back to 20 by the end of the year. I think the first part of the question is really just understanding where your view is on the capital adequacy ratio level that you're comfortable with, because I know in the past you've highlighted 20% as a trigger point for you, so I want to understand if that's still the case. And also, based on that, wondering what your outlook is on capital raising over the medium to near term, because if I tie that with your loan growth has been quite rapid over the last couple of months, and so it's really trying to understand where how that would have, what impact that would have on growth over the near term. And then the second question is on your loan growth. The first part is on your downstream oil and gas sector. I observed the strong growth in Q3 and the increase in contribution as well. It's now about 18% of your total loans. And I know over the last, shall I say, 24 months, banks have been a bit conservative on the downstream oil and gas sector. And so just trying to understand why, what's driving that strong growth in that sector and what your view is on risk in that segment, also considering that it accounts for the highest portion of your NPLs as well. And then the second part of the loan growth is really wanting to have a view of your outlook for Q4 loan growth, what to expect, and then also 2014 as well, outlook on loan growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Miwa. Can we take two more questions and then we'll... Operator, can we...
Yes, we will now take the next question from Benmi Asaulu of FBN Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation. I think some of my questions are slight additions to Muiwa's question. So on the capital adequacy ratio point, just to get some clarity on how that forecast or outlook for Q4, it going back to 20%, how that sort of impacts your loan growth over the next few months, given that you expect it to go up, the ratio to go up. So how would that impact your loan growth? Then if you could just share a bit more on which sectors you lent to when you referred to the dollar lending helping your net interest margins in Q3. And then the final question is really on your return on equity. So I don't recall seeing a number in your slide for 2013. Are you reiterating what you had before? And also, when you calculate your ROE, it appears to me that you exclude the other comprehensive income line, because I only get the 16% you quote for 9 months. If I include it, I get 14. So any clarity on that would be much appreciated. Thanks.
Mr. Shalu, are you still on?
I am still on. Sorry, do you hear my questions?
No, sorry. I don't know. We had a timeout for that, you know, the call was still live, but we couldn't hear anything.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll start again. Okay. So the first question is really just trying to understand how the capital adequacy ratio guidance going back up to 20% in Q4, what that means for your loan growth. So that's the first one. Second one is which sectors you're referring to that helped, in terms of dollar lending helping your net interest margins in Q3. So which sectors, you know, helped NIMs there. And then the third question was on your ROE calculation, because if I exclude the other comprehensive income line, then I get the 16% that you quote for 9 months for ROAE. If I include it, then I get 14%. So if you could just confirm that that's how the calculation is done and what the figure you're targeting for 2013 is. Those are my questions. Thanks.
Okay, one more set of questions.
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Sochi Solanke of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Sochi Solanke of Renaissance Capital. I have just two questions. The first one, well, what's driving oil and gas downstream? It's moved from 15 to 19%. And the second question is, the AMCON bond you spoke about, in terms of liquidity changing by 2014, by when do you expect to receive those treasury bills from AMCON? Thanks.
Okay, I think we should respond to these three sets of questions. There is a recurring question around our segmentation in terms of where we're lending, and there's an assumption that it's oil and gas downstream as in trading activities, which is not correct. Now, however, by I think they're called IOSCO, the industry classification rules, the refinery activities are classed as midstream. So these are loans. So, for example, our exposures to Dangote around the construction of his refinery and refinery mainly project is one of the contributors, and the rest of them in the oil and gas area actually upstream. So there's no downstream increase actually in any way. Now, on the capital adequacy question, basically what we are doing is we have, ever since we issued our Eurobond, we've had significant... Are you still there?
You're still connected, sir.
Yes. We've had significant interest from institutions and high networks who are ready to go into bilateral Tier 2 foreign currency investments in Access Bank. In fact, we booked the first one, I think, a few days ago, $100 million, priced below our Eurobond, actually, for a tenor of seven years. 7 years, actually, if we callable at our option, to extend to 10 years. So the easy way out, actually, of the capital adequacy growth or capital adequacy improvement expectation actually will be this strategy. In terms of the market for such depositors, we have more demand than we can provide supply, so to speak. With respect to capital adequacy as well, look to some retention on the earnings side as well. Now, Shei, there was a question on the ROE calculation.
Yeah, I think the ROE was based on the four other comprehensive income. So it's net of, yeah. So it's, Bumi is right in terms of what he has done. So it's before the other comprehensive income.
Herbert, there was a question on AMCON bonds, and they wanted to have an idea of the timing for when the AMCON will move out of AMCON bonds into CDO.
So pretty much all the AMCON bonds will be matured and paid back or replace the treasury bills, if you like, by December 31st, 2013.
Now, is there any outlook that you'd like, I mean, the outlook on capital raising, I think beyond what I've shared with you in terms of bilateral debt deals, I mean, we don't have any intention to seek any equity. Beyond that, we do have on our balance sheet some interesting assets, which I think by the time we end the year, we will have finalized our strategy for. We have a significant land bank in our books, located just after the ShopRite, I think that's ShopRite Mall. And it's a huge tranche of land, and the development upside is phenomenal. Now, we don't want to, I mean, we've been patiently planning our approach and our strategy to development, especially more so that our license, our operating license, has changed from universal banking to commercial banking. As a universal bank, we may have held the entirety of the upside and have been able to do some very unique things, you know, that would have ensured that we maximize to its fullest the land bank opportunity. As a commercial bank, we've had to then go in the direction of partnering with various institutions. We put this consortium together, first-class institutions, both local and international. And I think Herbert will be talking to this towards the beginning of 2014. But I think it's a nice upside present he has for our investors. So the capital raising that we, well, the capital building will be a combination of debt, bilaterals, as well as leveraging our asset base, particularly our non-financial assets in terms of the real assets, such as our land bank, and bringing in capital through that. But 20% is our comfort zone, and you know we will run 2014 and beyond well within our comfort zone. I believe that's all the. There's an outlook for Q4 growth. Shay, you want to take that?
Yeah, in terms of an outlook for Q4 growth, what you see is not a significant growth given the levels of where the capital are. So maybe what you see is another 5%, you know, growth in the loan book, which you then see about 30% loan growth year on year.
But I think the key thing to note is that the loan growth largely was triggered in the last month of Q3. So in terms of the NIM's contribution, it's not actually as strong as it will be when you take it for a full quarter. So you will actually see continuous improvement in the NIMs in that regard. Can we take some more questions, please?
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Ronak Gadia of Exotic Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just continuing with the capital adequacy theme, like you said, some of it will be raised from internal sources from your profits. I see historically you've had a pretty high dividend payout ratio. Last year was about 45%. Does that mean for this year we might see a decline in payout ratio? My second question is to do with your outlook for next year. You've had a pretty strong run this year, but what's your outlook for next year in terms of growth and profitability, and what will be the drivers for that in terms of NIMs, cost-to-income ratio, and cost of risk?
Okay. Ronak, let me paraphrase your question. One, do we expect a decline in dividend payouts? But I think the larger question was around growth and profitability for 2014, and specifically you spoke to three ratios, CIR, cost of risk, and did you say cost to income? Net interest margin, okay. CIR, cost of risk, and NIMS. Okay, all right. Can we have another question?
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Adeolu Omotala of ARM Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the call. Just two questions now. Was there, you know, any staff restructuring in Q3? Just looking at your numbers. And what impact would that have on the OPEX? Would that suggest that OPEX could be even lower than what we've seen in Q3 13? So if you could just clarify that. The second relates to the coverage ratio. You spoke about it being in excess of 100%. If you had the regulatory risk reserve, I just wanted to just explain what that is and how it has to the coverage ratio. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Motola, I just need to ask your question on staff restructuring. I'm not too sure I understand.
Actually, where it's coming from, I was just looking at the first, I think, two slides of your presentation. You had numbers about staff strength. So as at Q3, you said was 3265. That Q2, I just, you know, glanced back at the previous presentation and it was a much higher figure. So I was just wondering if there was any development on that front and if that would improve your OPEX going forward.
Very quickly on that, I remember that at the last conference call, we had indicated that I think there was an error, that number, at the last conference call. But in terms of our, there's been no restructuring, you know, per se. So we haven't lost 300 staff. I think we're restating. If you recall, at that meeting, at that last conference call, we had actually clarified that 3.6 was not the correct figure, and it was more 3.2.
Okay.
Can we take one more question?
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Rob Sheward of Tosca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks very much. Just a couple of quick ones. Firstly, on the deposit side, I was just wondering if the sort of drop was something seasonal, and then the sort of your comfort level, I guess, on liquidity, and whether you can still see some improvement in the cost of funds going forward. I appreciate most of the high cost deposits are now sort of off the balance sheet. And then on the OPEX side, it was kind of being asked, but just to sort of pursue that further, was it obviously moves around a lot. I was just wondering what the sort of run rate generally is, I don't know, on a monthly or a quarterly basis, what we should expect, and then what that would be moving forward into 2014. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Okay. Decline in dividend payout, whether there's an adjustment. Ronak, we have a dividend policy which guides us. I must say that one of the things that the dividend policy talks to is the fact that we have a target capital adequacy ratio, so we bear that in mind in terms of our payout on a full year basis. So it could constrain our dividend, not by much. It could, but not by much. To the extent of our confidence in the internal capital opportunities, particularly from our land bank. So what we'll pretty much be doing is we're going to be weighing how soon in 2014 do we begin to reap the benefits of the land bank, and that will basically inform whether we maintain our dividend payout ratio at the levels of 2012 against 2013. Now, the coverage ratio, Shehi will talk to, the OPEX run rate, you know, Shehi will talk to as well. Herbert will speak to the growth in profitability, CIR, capital, the NIM, and so on. But let me talk to Rob's point around the deposits and cost of funds. You see, for us, one thing that we have targeted is that we want to operate at an industry leading cost of funds position, and to do that, we have to be very disciplined around the sources of funding that we have. Even today, we do take deposits at the very lower end of what purchase money comes to banks in Nigeria. But we are very, very, very what's the word now? We are not very accommodating of fixed deposits. So beyond this also, we have taken steps to begin to reduce our funding from public sector names in the context of the CRR. And if you look at over the past 6 weeks or so, I think that a number of deposits from the public sector that are purchased, basically we have not rolled over, you know, as they mature. So these are not expensive deposits per se, but these are simply deposits from the public sector that are CRR affected. And when we take the total cost of the deposit plus the CRR effect, it's not profitable, you know, for us. So our emphasis really is for deposit growth from cash management. With the launch of Primus, we expect to see our market share of cash management from the large corporates increase even further. But, you know, bare bones, it should come from our personal banking business and our business banking, you know, business. So we are talking really low-cost deposits that's coming at less than 50 basis points cost. Herbert, you want to talk to the group?
Okay. Ronak, in talking about the growth, I just want to emphasize a couple of things. First of all, as far as loan growth is concerned, I think you would see, on the average, a 20% growth over this year. Remember that the whole of 2013, we did not grow our loan volume at the rate at which we were going to grow them, because we had a lot to do with integration, making sure we had the right staffing and people, you know, as we ought to do it. So if you look at it, taking from 2012, we've pretty much maintained the same level of loan, if you like, albeit a slight increase as we move towards the end of 2013. And so a growth of 20% in 2014 is what you are likely to see. We believe that we should be able to try and maintain our cost of funds where they are, except if you have certain regulatory issues coming up yet again. But we think
If we do that, we should be able to maintain an NIM of about 7%, given the fact that we will still be just pushing our retail strategy and the full effect in terms of managing our efficiency ratios would not have been fully felt. But I think at 7%, we would have been able to hold up where we ought to be. In terms of cost of risk, we don't see it exceeding 1.5%, and we think that our cost to income ratio should be about 65%.
You were
asking about the numbers. We believe that our OPEC numbers should pretty much hold us where they are right now, right through 2014. You know, we don't think that we should see anything more than where we've been operating at this particular point in time. And at the end of the day, our after-tax ROE should basically start, you know, improving and should be a bit north of 18%. Those are the type of boundaries we are looking at.
Oh, thank you, Herbert.
I'll just take the question on the liquidity risk reserve. Because of the difference in the provisioning requirement under IFRS and under prudential guidelines, the CBN expects every bank to keep a regulatory risk reserve account where if the provision under IFRS is lower than under prudential guidelines, your profit will not be affected, but you require to take that out of your retained earnings. So it's a reserve against provision, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, you should add it. When you're looking at your total coverage, you should add it to you, and that's why we've explained it in the manner we have described it.
Thanks, Jay. So can we take a few more questions?
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Ryan Ayake of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thanks for the presentation and for the call. I was wondering if you can shed a little bit more color on your FX deposits and FX lending. I'm sorry if you've given out the info. I didn't catch it. I would like to know how much of your book currently is in FX versus in Naira, and then I would like to know what the yield differential is in those loans. And then the second part of my question would be on AMCON. How much in the end was deducted in terms of basis points, and is that then a final figure that you expect for next year, and also whether it includes only on-balance sheet or it will include off-balance sheet exposures as well? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Peter Mashamgwe of Ligue Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to find out what would be your steady-state NPL ratio. And I also want to know, do you guys feel pressure to deliver on a quarterly basis?
Thank you. Slide the third question, please.
Thank you. Again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we will take the next question from Taman Babia of Jadara Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a couple of questions, all interlinked. Looking at your P&L statement, it's just surprising to see that your operating expenses are greater than your net interest income. And then when I tie it up with your pure fee income, which is around 21, which has been flat year on year, despite the growth in loans, and bearing in mind the regulatory pressure on fee income going forward, I'm just wondering where does your profit go down the line? That's one part of the question. The second is, when I look at your outlook 2014 and 2015, it might sound that 2014 is another transition period. I might be wrong, but and 2015 is basically where you're trying to grow your lines of business further and your bottom line. So couple of comments would be grateful.
Yeah. Thanks. Maybe we'll start with the third set of questions. Now, I don't know when in the evolution of the bank you began to follow the year-on-year performance. But if you note from 2012, when we began to digest the full effects of a certain acquisition, you will find that the OPEX profile of the institution changed significantly following that acquisition. And at the same time, the nature of balance sheet construction that was done as part of the deal was of a nature to constrain our ability to build NIM. I think at the last conference call, we did explain that we had a significant portion of our balance sheet in certain fixed income instruments. These are these zero coupon AMCON bonds that were yielding or are yielding 10%. Now in 2011 and for the early part of 2012, there was a positive carry, a significant positive carry on these instruments. But in 2013, that situation reversed significantly. Unfortunately, we could not exit these bonds because of the nature of, well, you could, but the cost of exit, you know, are quite significant. Beyond that, on the operating expense side, we've been hit, if you like, by all the other, what's the word now? All the other regulatory introductions on the policy side around the increase in AMCON levies, AMCON related levies, CRR effects, etc., etc. So I guess, you know, from the perspective of 2013, you see an institution that has fought its way to strong earnings despite the constraint within which it operated. Now, also at the last conference call, you know, we did explain that those constraints are effectively freed up in come 2014. And beyond that, and more fundamentally, the aspects of the business that typically make money for you, which is engaging customers, growing loans, and so on, were things that in 2012 and 2013 we couldn't aggressively go out to do because we were doing a lot of corporate restructuring, corporate repositioning, and so on. And so, whilst you have given us an extra year, I don't think we need it. 2014 is the year that you know, the institution begins to fly with unfettered wings, so to speak. Now, Peter, you spoke to pressure to deliver on a quarterly basis. I guess the best answer is that one of the reasons why you have investor calls and quarterly interactions with your investors must be because you are concerned about delivering value to them. To that extent, there would be a necessary adrenaline that drives an institution to perform. But I think our somewhat conservative mindset in terms of our culture and our, you know, and our emphasis on sustainable earnings and a sustainable business model are such that it is not an undue pressure to perform, so to speak. The gentleman from Deutsche Bank, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get your name, Brian, wanted to know about our FX deposits. Well, basically the profile of our deposits and what percentage are FX deposits and lending and so what, you know, Shay, you want to take that?
All right. In terms of the FX deposit, today the FX deposit book is around 28%. And I think if you look at the slide which you put out there on the loan book, is around 36%. Now, this is not taking into account the Eurobond, which is also funding. And therefore, so if you look at the deposit vis-à-vis the loan, is a higher percentage. But however, we have other long-term funding, both from DFI and multilateral, as well as Eurobond, which essentially are not depositing. A number of these loans are powered by this funding that you see. In terms of AMCON, you wanted to know how much was deducted. I think it was based on 0.5 and was based on 0.5 of total assets. The off-balance sheet portion wasn't added in respect to, in reference to that.
The NPL? NPL ratio. I thought Herbert had taken that.
I had, which was
that cost of risk was
1.5.
And so I guess you can work back the NPL ratio. I think it will be about
2.9%.
So can we take some more questions?
Thank you. We will now take the next question from Brian Mugabe of Imara Africa Securities. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Just to follow up on the FX lending, what are the NIMs on your FX book versus the Naira? And then my second question was around the CRR. You'd indicated at half year you expected the impact to be 3 billion. Is that still, has it turned out to be more than what you're anticipating, or is that still your guidance for the full year? And then lastly, other income and your general administration expenses has been quite a large increase in the other income under the other income line, as well as the general and admin expenses. Could you just give a bit more color on that? Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. We will take the next question. It's a follow-up question from Soji Solanke of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I just have one quick follow-up. The discussion around the land bank, my understanding is since you're not a holding company, you can't hold on to this non-core asset. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. Has anything changed? Because what I understood was there was also a deadline for banks to dispose of this asset. Thanks.
One more question.
And we will now take the next question from Tosin Ojo of Cardinal Stone Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just want to find out your 2014 to 2015 targets. Have you factored in a possible continuing restrictive monetary policy environment? I mean, for instance, if the CBN moved to raise cash reserve ratio on public sector deposits, so to say, maybe 200%, or if the CBN comes to do something a little bit more aggressive, do you think this is a target to still be achievable? And then considering also the election year and all of those, I mean, looking at where you're just coming from your integration stage and all of that, do you think 2014, 2015, you'll be able to meet your target as you have mentioned?
Thank you. Okay. Well, let me say that traditionally, Nigerian banking, election years are good years for banks. So, I mean, let's assume, of course, that the central bank does not respond, in the way you have suggested. Clearly, I mean, if there's further tightening, it simply increases the cost. If there's further tightening, particularly around, for example, if the central bank does so using the CRR as its instrument, it will constrain earnings, further. But as we have seen, CRR related tightening, is not the be all and end all of Nigerian banking. Particularly in our case, given that we're leveraging more our foreign currency balance sheet, than our Naira balance sheet on the lending side. The reality, however, is that our business model has never and traditionally never been built around, you know, the public sector end of the market. Even though following the acquisition of Intercontinental, you know, public sector became a more significant contributor to Access Bank's balance sheet, you know, we will expect to see that dilute, you know, 2014 and 2015. Very quickly, with respect to land bank assets, the rule by Nigerian banking regulations are that assets acquired through the process of recovery of a loan, banks are allowed to hold them and, of course, dispose of them in the best way possible, you know, to maximize their return. So I think that addresses your question. It's neutral. Is neutral to universal banking or non-universal banking. These are just fundamental aspects of Nigerian banking that continue to hold true as far as lending and prudential guidelines are concerned. Brian, you had questions around FX names, CRR, and so on. Maybe Shehi will take them.
All right, yeah. With respect to the FX names, it's about, you know, 5%, and on the Naira book, it's, you know, anywhere between 9 to 10%. So that's the type of names that you see both on the Naira and on the FX. Now, the question around CRR.
The CRR cost.
The CRR cost. I mean, yes, at the time we had that call, the amount that we were debited and had increased in, further to that. So really, it's much more than what we had. So it's around about, it's maybe a billion and a half more than what we had projected earlier, based on what the initial debit has, the amount we had debited with.
There's a question around increase in
other income. Now, other income, we've also noticed this. This is coming from the fees and commission that will have gone to the fees and commission lines and the profit on disposal. You know, so it is just it's not meant to be on that line. So that's why you see it to be reclassified. So it's a mapping error there. So we haven't seen that much jump in other income. So you're right.
Then the other expenses, he said that he noticed an increase in other expenses. He wanted that.
No, on that general and general, I mean, if you look at the, it's not an increase, if you look at the run rate on that line, so the number of expenses on that line, that's where you have diesel, you have rent, you know, so that line itself, so it's on a quarter-on-quarter basis, he hasn't gone up, and that's why we have chipped it out. If you see the version of the account on the website, we've broken down properly so that you can. I don't know which version of the account you are looking at. So it's not an increase. If you look at the financials as at June and financials as at the increase there is in line with the normal quarter on quarter increase. So it's not an increase. And I also know what you're talking about. I think it's a question of, you know, breakdown which you've now provided in the accounts on the website.
Okay. Can we take some more questions?
We have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening and participating. This will actually be my final quarterly analyst and investor conference call as the CEO of the bank. Maybe from time to time I will call in as an investor myself. And I'd just like to appreciate, you know, all of you for calling in, you know, today and for your interest and support for the institution. And as I hand over to Herbert, I trust that you can all look forward to a much better performance from Access Bank 2014 and beyond. Thank you very much, and God bless.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.